when it comes to the usefulness of these sorts of transcription projects, I think there's several uses. I think it's beneficial to students on several fronts. Firstly, it ensures close reading. They're really engaging with the text. They have to think about it, about the text, not just word to word, but letter to letter. So they're piecing together this document and really digesting it. So that's very useful. Secondly, it gets them to think about materiality. It gets them to think about the object itself. You know, all too often when they're, you know, we're living in a golden age of primary sources. They can have anything online. They could read whatever they want. Anything that's really been written in the English language is available online. But they don't necessarily understand the object or what it looked like. And that is important when you're looking at, say, a diary versus a letter versus newspapers and these sorts of things. So I think it's very useful in that regard. It's also useful because it's at least within the context of this project, it guarantees that the students have a publication credit to their name. So the transcription work that the students did for the New England Hidden Histories Project, run by the Congregational Archive in Boston, will feature on the project website. It's a project that's bringing to the public for the first time digital facsimiles of 17th century New England documents, along with the transcription, which makes it legible to most contemporary readers. And our students are going through the process of, and I tell them this, unlocking those documents for a computer age. Right, documents that would have languished on the shelf of a private library can now be read across the country, indeed across the world, because they have gone through the effort of transcribing that material. What our students did was they looked at a private diary of one of the principal, if not the most important New Englander at the time, Cotton Mather, and for the year 1692, the year of the witch trials. And at points, he talks it directly about what's happening in Salem, and you can see his thinking change about it over time. He starts by, you know, really wrestling with what was happening, kind of believing the early accusations, and then slowly, as the trials go on, he comes to the realization that this is perhaps not what he thought it was. So they went on that journey with him through transcription, and in our discussions afterwards, they can see how that change over time occurred.
It wasn't like, you know, picking a book up and reading it, was it? I mean, talk about the language that was used in the diary and how it compares to what we know as English today.
So I didn't really give them much of a background. I didn't even tell that. Really, I didn't tell them who it was because I didn't want to kind of. I didn't want to manipulate their expectations. So I just said, this is a prominent New Englander. Here's his in Boston. This is his view of what's happening in Salem. So that's all the information they got. But it is challenging because they're wrestling with 17th century English. So this is later, but think of it kind of like Shakespearean language, right? So they have that it's a form of English that they're uncomfortable with. Even if they could read it in plain text, it would still be difficult. But secondly, the handwriting is 350 years ago. There's no standardization when it comes to manuscript English. Sometimes this person Mather would write in shorthand, which was complicated for them because I think contemporary students don't really have a sense of shorthand or what that is, because of predictive text they don't have to shorten their words, and so, you know, they had those were certainly challenges, but in the end, many of them saw it as a puzzle, and that was intriguing. And whenever I've done this in the past, and I've done several transcription projects with partner archives in many of our upper division classes here, whenever I've done it, the students always rise to the challenge.
My name is Victoria Asper. I'm from Loudoun County, Virginia, and my major is secondary education with a concentration in social studies. One thing I learned doing this project was how to decipher 1600s handwriting. And what surprised me is I enjoyed doing it. It was kind of like solving a puzzle.
My name is Tyler Carpenter. I'm from Williamsport, Maryland, Washington County. And one thing I found interesting was a lot of journals, like this was a personal journal. A lot of them are not meant to be read. And this guy was very, like, I guess what would be the word, exuberant, and like wanted this to be read by multiple people, even though it wasn't.
My name's Andrew West. I am a secondary education major. I'm from Carlisle, Pennsylvania. I guess one thing that surprised me was really just how much I enjoyed it. Like Victoria said, it was a puzzle, and you just constantly were trying to figure things out, and you'd figure something out, and then you move to the next line, and you have to do it all over again.
Hi, my name is Nick Ferroni. I'm a history major with a concentration in Civil War, and I'm from Bowie, Maryland. I also liked the project. It was, like, infuriating in the beginning, just, like, looking at a word, knowing it's English, and not being able to read it. But if you, like, put it down and then came back to it over and over again, it got easier as it went. As far as, like I figured out it was Cotton Mather, and then I was able to do some research and find out that he's, like, like a minister, and he was writing to try to reach his congregation. I just remember that in mine, it seemed like he was taking notes on a sermon that he would give, and a lot of it, he was promoting a book that he had written prior to the witch craze, and saying like, "Here, look, I predicted these things prior to any of this happening." So, yeah, just like. Advertising the book that he had written before.
Mine was, it wasn't a sermon, it was more of talking about his sermon. You got to see how he processed his, I guess, people that went to his church, what his thought process was, and he talked about, like, an illness plaguing him. It was basically the witches cursed him and stuff like that, and stuff that is trivial now, but it kind of puts you in the aspect of a 18th century preacher, which is what he was.
The part I did was he was looking back on a sermon he had given, and so he's kind of like critiquing himself, and he kind of noted it, what parts of the sermon the congregation really understood and reacted to. And then another part he talked about, he was like, he didn't say this, but I mean, you could kind of tell he was like, okay, I won't really talk about this again because nobody was really paying attention.